I'll ask you to open up
Love
the prayer.
Talk Radio.
It's the morning show.
Okay, you want to rehearse it one time before we go in there?
With award-winning journalist Cheryl Smith.
I'm good. I'm not that good.
Bringing you informative, enlightening, thought-provoking, inspiring, and entertaining talk radio.
Good morning. This is Ashley Moss from Texas Metro News. You typically hear me on Monday mornings on In the Middle from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Just letting you know that we have a live and special broadcast for you today. We're getting ready to cut on over to the Black Business Economic Empowerment Commission Town Hall. It's all about voting. So if you have not cast your ballot, this is one that you'll want to tune into. You can also follow us on Facebook Live and interact with us over there. Getting ready to cut in. See you soon.
She may tell me to continue. She know I can't do anything without her. Okay. Thomas, please open this up with prayer.
With the name of God, most gracious, most merciful, praise be to God, sustain and cherish of the worlds. Most gracious, most merciful, master, day of judgment, thee alone do we worship, and thy name we seek. Show us the straight way, the way of those on whom thy eyes be sown, thy grace, whose portion is our wrath, by those who are straight. Amen.
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 Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, everyone, for coming on with the Black Business Empowerment Council now. This day is one of the most important days that we will have. I see the Honorable Mr. Charles Barron, our assembly man from Brooklyn. He just got off from beating up Bob Law, so I know he's in good shape.
That's what I said.
So we're blessed to have the people's representative. He's not just the person from Brooklyn. He's the people's representative because we believe in what we are going to talk about today is educating our people on how to vote and who to vote for. If we don't know what an office holder can do and should be doing, how do we hold them accountable? You know, so we want Charles to introduce himself. We want Ashley Moss to introduce herself. And then we're going to get started with the program. Charles has given us, Reggie, you was talking about you, but Charles left his program that he has today to be with us, and we appreciate it. So we want to give Charles the first shot, let him run on out, and then the floor is going to be yours, Mr. Moss. So please introduce yourself. I guess you introduce yourself as the lady, and then we'll move to Charles to continue. Thank you.
Well, good morning. My name is Ashley Moss. I'm a general assignment porter here in Dallas, Texas with Texas Metro News. I'm a member of the Black Press, and I just have to say it's a privilege to be a part of the meeting this morning, and I'm glad to be a part.
Thank you. Thank you. And we are privileged to have you on. Charles, just so you know, we was talking about people not knowing who to vote for, what it was about. And Ashley and them did the research. So today we're going to educate our people on who has what powers to do what. And so that we don't be misrepresented and coming to you as the assemblyman, you know, acting like you the senator that makes the laws. You know, we have to know why we're coming to you. So, brother, please introduce yourself with all honors. And I must say, I respect the Honorable Charles Barron is the assemblyman. I will call him the assemblyman. I know he would prefer me to call him Charles, but we have to learn to give proper respect to our people to assemble in Charles Barron. Most honored. Please.
Well, thank you, sir. And I'm just so honored to be with you, Sister Ashley. You know, keep up the good work where you are, what you're doing in Texas, wherever you're in Texas.
Yes.
Well, keep up the good work, my sister. I just wanted to come this morning. I do have a limited amount of time, but this is a critical time for us, and not just because of Trump. And I know everybody's Trumpetized, and they got to get rid of Trump, and they're going to go with Biden to get rid of Trump. And then after Trump is gone, because he will go, and he's going to go fighting and threatening, and these racist right-wing redneck crackers are going to go crazy and declare war, and we're going to be scared. But as Malcolm said, the wolf with the snarl showing you his and her teeth is easy to see. It's the fox with the smile, the neoliberal smile, that is more difficult to detect. So oftentimes we find ourselves aligning ourselves with the Democratic Party because the Republican is worse, and nobody can be worse than Trump. And by the way, he's going to lose. I firmly believe that. He's going to go out fighting, screaming, I ain't leaving. He might sit in at the White House, and they may have to get the army to take him out. Or he'll definitely threaten in the Supreme Court. That's why he's trying to get his person through. So it'll be 6-3 Supreme Court, and he can take it there. And if he doesn't win it there, he'll take it to the Senate, and he's not going to go out easy. And then some of his sick, racist, right-wing rednecks are going to threaten people. They threaten to kidnap a governor. They threaten all kinds of stuff. So that's going to happen, but I want to caution us that while all of that is happening, and we should address it, the biggest problem that the black community has is capitalism. Capitalism and its colonial setup, setting up our black communities like domestic colonies of capitalism. So while Trump's insanity has to go, but capitalism's madness we must focus on, because its ideology is racism. Its system is capitalism, colonial capitalism. If you look at every black community, we are suffering with some of the worst social indicators you could think of. The poverty, the unemployment. You know, I don't even have to tell you all of this. Inadequate health care, which is why we suffered so much from the pandemic, the COVID pandemic, because we had all of these preconditioned health. Whether it was a Democrat or a Republican, this two-party, racist, parasitic, predatory capitalist system with its warmongering, imperialistic foreign policy is at the core. And that's why I call myself a radical, an elected revolutionary, because when I took math in school, in college, radical means getting to the root. We often organize around symptomology. So the symptom of this parasitic, colonial, racist, capitalist system is poverty. So we got to do anti-poverty program. The symptom is police terrorism. So we march against police killings and police terrorism, defund the police, dismantle the police. The symptom is inadequate health care. The symptom is the wealth gap and the income gap and all of that. So we start our own businesses and we try to respond to all of that. We have to focus on the root causes. Every black community, like Harlem and like my beloved East New York, where we fortunately are still the majority in many other places because of gentrification, you're even losing that, but we are still the majority. So if we are the majority, 76% of the people in my assembly district is black. Another 16% is Latino, brown. We're 92% of the community. We don't own the land. We don't own the businesses. We don't own the housing development. We don't control the healthcare system at Brookdale Hospital. We don't control the education system. And we don't control the police. They're out of control. So what we did is say, yes, do your presidential politics. I'll see y'all after the election. Trump is going to lose. Biden's going to get in, and he's not going to do any better than Biden and Obama did for us. And I'll get to that in a second, if you don't mind. I know it's hard talking about Obama, but I'm going to give it a shot anyway. I'll deal with that. But right now, on the local level, that's where our power is. In New York State, we have a $175 billion state budget and $88 to $90 billion city budget. That's $260 billion in one state. And in New York City, the most powerful city in the world, 65% of the people are Black, Latino, and Asian. Whites are minorities. So what are they doing with all the power and control over $260 billion? Cuomo talking about he doesn't have the money. We're broke. It break me with $160, $70 billion. That's the kind of broke I want to be. It's not that they don't have the money. The question is the prioritization of spending. The prioritization of spending. Where is the money going? You know, you're going to have budget gaps, $10 billion, $6 billion, $5 billion. Sometimes you have surpluses depending upon how the economy, the capitalist economy is going. But I want to say to you, locally is where it's at. I was able to win a city council seat. I was in the city council for 12 years. And even though I said I'm radical, I'm a revolutionary, I went to Zimbabwe and brought Robert Mugabe to City Hall. They had a fit. I went to Cuba to study socialism with the Castro folk, and I went to Venezuela. I went to the Middle East, to the Gaza Strip, and I read and studied the socialist movements in Africa, Kwame Nkrumah, Sekou Touré, Patrice Lumumba, some of the socialists right here in America, Amalia Yesitela and the African People's Socialist Party and Viola Plummer and the December 12th movement. All of that said I was a Panther. They told me that don't say you're a Panther if you want to win. You know, just say that after you get in. I said, no. I told the people I was a Panther to my heart. I don't wear shirts and ties. They told me I couldn't get in this state assembly without a shirt and tie. I'm sitting pretty in the state assembly without a shirt and tie. So I'm saying all of that to say you can be revolutionary, radical, Black, conscious, and win and deliver. When I got in, I honestly was concerned whether I'd be able to deliver because I interrupted the governor and his state of the state address, and he got mad and thought they were going to punish me. I have three new $80 to $110 million schools in my district. Five parks we renovated for over $40 million in my district. I have a new $12 million state-of-the-art youth center run by Man Up, Inc. and the youth in my district. I have a new, brand-new library coming in, $31 million. I could sit here for the rest of this program and list all the things we accomplished, including $50 million of merit scholarships for CUNY students, the City University of New York. And since we're looking at power, the reason why I ran for city council, power. The city council passes the budget, not the mayor. So if we are the majority in the city council, we could say to this mayor, we're not passing a budget if it's not a multi-billion dollar budget to wipe out poverty and billions of dollars going to Black people. We can say that, but they won't, and I'll tell you why. We pass the budget. We pass municipal laws. And here's the most important thing. We, the city council, determines what's going to be built on city-owned land. That's powerful. I'm a Black radical, red, black, and green flag in my office, not the American flag. These white, rich developers came into my office knowing I had the power. If I said no to their project, even though I can't pick the developer, HPD does, the Housing Preservation Development, mayor's office does, I can say, hey, they got to go through the city council. So if the six members of the subcommittee land use agree with me, they'll call me up and they say, Brother Barron, you know, do you want this project? If I say no, that project's dead. I don't care if you're a trillionaire. Donald Trump can come into my beloved East New York on Bradford Street and say, I want to build Trump Towers. He has to come see the Black Panther. And if I say no, my committee is going to say no, and it will be stopped. And I've done that. There is no gentrification in the 60th Assembly District of East New York. It's happening in Harlem. It's happening in Bedford-Stuyvesant and Crown Heights. Not only did I not have gentrification, there was 67% Black when I got into office in 2002. We are now 76% Black. We had an increase in the Black population. There was 6% White. They went down to 3%. I didn't run them out. They left on their own. So don't blame me, the Black Panther. They left on their own. But that's power. So here's our problem, and I'll stop here. The whites know that if they stay the figureheads, we're going to see the racism clearly. But we're suffering from what Dr. Kwame Osadjifo and Kuma says, neo-colonialism. The new way to colonize us is to put Black faces in high places, maintain the same white dominant policies, but when a Black face does it, you don't see the racism and you don't protest. So in my district, I protested against them always having white developers. They came in and I said, no, not on this one. This sister, Erica Keller, she's a developer. We're not getting no minority and woman contract subcontracts. We're not getting that. You're going to make her the general contractor. Give her corporation the whole project. And I didn't sign off on it until they did. So we got her the whole project. She has a third of it. The white guy, here's the racism. They told her, well, you don't have capacity. That's the new racist word. You don't have capacity. I said, why doesn't she? Well, this is 300 housing units. She's only done 150. So she has to get a partner, a white man. So she did. The white guy comes in. I've done 300. I said, really? When did you first do your 300? Or 1971. So before 1971, you never did 300. So how the hell did you get a contract in 1971 not having done 300? And they didn't say, you don't have capacity. So, well, let me tell you something. Since we got the power, she's getting a third of this project, you're getting a third, and this other sister's getting the other third. Mm-hmm. That's the bottom line, and that's how it went down. In New York City, my sister Ashley, in New York City, look how Black empowered we are. The attorney general is Black. The head of the assembly is Black. The head of the Senate is Black. The majority leader in the assembly is Black. The public advocate in the city is Black. The majority leader in the city council is Black. The head of the largest Democratic organization, Kings County, Brooklyn, in the country is a Black woman. A head of the Democratic Party, Keith Wright, in Harlem, is a Black man. A head of the Democratic organization in Queens, a Black man. A head of the Democratic organization in Bronx, a Latino brother. A head of 1199, one of the biggest unions in the country, definitely in the city, a Black man. A head of 32BJ, a Black man. A head of DC 37, large union, a Black Latino brother. All of that Blackness. And they all are under the control of the Democratic Party. And we have the abject poverty we have. They pass budgets that they shouldn't be passing. This last budget. Y'all think Cuomo's all of that? He's a fraud. He's a hypocrite. He done getting all this credit for his writing a book on how he's dealing with the pandemic. First of all, we weren't the most populous state in the union. California was. So what were we doing, the epicenter of the death? And the people being diagnosed. Why did we have that? He told the nursing homes they had to take COVID patients, and our elderly died under him. And he's touted as some great response to the right. This man, we saw that the virus was killing us more in black and brown communities. We died more with, and what do? They bring a boat in a white community and put 1,000 beds in it for white people. They take the Javits Center in a white community and turn it into a hospital. They set Central Park in a white community and made that a medical facility. Didn't do none of this until we went crazy, and then they start bringing some stuff to our community. Black faces in high places doesn't mean black power. Martin Luther King said they are manufactured leaders that are produced and created by the white power structure, given resources and high positions so that they can maintain control over our communities. Black power is still needed. Black power should be our focus economically, politically, and that's why I ran for the city council seat. My wife, Inez Barron, she took my, after I was terminated out, she's the city council member now. She was the state assembly. So we have all of that in our community, and we are making a profound difference. We must have an independent black radical political movement and focus on the local seats of power. I thank you all for listening. I'm sorry I went on so long, but I wanted to get it all in before I have to duck out and go to my meeting.
We are blessed to have you, brother, as an example. We have to keep putting you in front of our people because we understand that even black politicians like to keep the voters stupid so that they can keep getting in for doing nothing. So we have to raise the conscience of our people. And with you, we will do that. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Continue being the people's representative, my brother.
Thank you so much, sir. And Sister Ashley, I'm so sorry that I have to duck out, but I wish you the best in all that you do and keep up the good work that you're doing.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Success.
Thank you.
Okay, you need us, we here. Thank you.
All right, appreciate that.
Okay. Regina, I think you can unmute now. Yeah, unmute. Unmute. Okay, can you still can't hear you? Savilla? Unmute.
Hi, I'm here. I'm here.
Okay, please say a few words. These are my partners that I'm trying to get in here. I wouldn't be able to do these things without these two ladies. So please, Savilla, please make a comment, and then we're going to give the floor to Mrs. Moss, please.
Yes, I just want to say welcome to everyone and thank you for joining today. And after listening to the Assemblyman Barron, I think that everyone can understand why he was invited here to speak at this town hall. I think that he's a model that Black people can look up to and look at in terms of what we can do at local government level to make a change. And I think the thing that resonated with me when he talked was that, you know, black faces in high places does not equal power. And so that's why we're having this session today, and Ashley will go in more depth about what we can be doing at the local level. And I definitely would like to give a shout out to another compatriot of ours, Cheryl, who is out. She had oral surgery, but she and Ashley did a significant amount of the research that Ashley will be presenting today. And so, again, I welcome everyone, and I hope that this, I know that this will be an informative session, and I encourage everyone to share the information with others in your network and your family as we enter the election season. Thank you. So, Ashley?
Thank you.
Walter or Ashley?
No, Ashley, please, come on. That's a fitting introduction.
Well, thank you very much. Again, it's a privilege to be a part this morning, and again, very impacted by what Assemblyman Barron said, and I'm sure that I'll reiterate some of what he shared, but I'm here today to talk about down-ballot races, which are extremely crucial to this 2020 election cycle. So, as you've heard, and I think it's exciting that New York State, today's the first day of early voting. We're just under 2 weeks in here in Texas. And I don't know if you guys have heard, but we've made some significant strides and probably had some of the largest numbers ever come out. So 9 days out from the election, probably the most pivotal of our time. The last time I checked early this morning, more than 51 million people have voted early so far. This is either by mail-in ballot or in person. And I know as you guys are starting out today, there's 88 early voting sites in New York compared to 1,200, which will be available across the state on Election Day. We've already exceeded across the country our 2016 numbers, and obviously we're still several days out. So what does that mean? The country has already cast 37% of the total votes that were counted in the entire 2016 general election. So people are hearing the message that if they want change, then they need to show out. And you guys understand we're engaged really in the fight of our lifetime. And you know, for us in the Black community, that didn't begin in 2016 with the election of President Trump. It didn't begin in 2012. It wasn't back in 2008. It began probably with the initiation of us being brought to the country. You could say it went back to the 1800s with Reconstruction, where we gained momentum in Black power and in political power, and then lost it and didn't start. I emphasize this, start to again and again until the Voting Rights Act of 1965, and which outlawed discriminatory voting practices, effectively giving Black Americans the right to cast ballots freely. And we know that that has been an uphill stride ever since. So here we are. So if you're wondering, what are the issues, what trends are leading Black voters to the polls in 2020? Associated Press put out a poll recently saying 7 in 10 voters, not just Black voters, but voters, 70% of voters who are polled believe the country is on the wrong track for one reason or another, one party or another. Primarily, those concerns are due to coronavirus, COVID-19, and the economy. And as we know here in the Black community, COVID-19 not only cast a light, but greatly widened the racial inequity that we've experienced across all situations, education, health, workforce, glaringly so. What else are we concerned about in the Black community? On top of racial injustice and police brutality, low wages, college affordability, healthcare, housing, that's what's driving Black voters to the polls in 2020. I just want to share this, what I found about some of the headlines around Black businesses being some of the most impacted here in the last 8 months or so. Coronavirus hitting Black businesses owners hardest. More than half of Black-owned businesses may not survive COVID-19. Black-owned businesses hit especially hard by coronavirus pandemic, study finds. And Black-owned businesses face additional challenges during the pandemic. This is just in the last 6 weeks alone, and it's been estimated that up to 40% of Black businesses are being hit in some way, especially hard during this time. And as Assemblyman was talking about, what are some lessons from past elections and past primaries? Well, we know that in Black majority cities and Black majority districts, voter power exists, and voting in urban centers and again across Black majority cities often makes huge differences in elections, but that means you actually have to get out there and cast your ballot. What are we anticipating here with early voting and into Election Day? Polling issues. What are we anticipating? Long polling lines, reduced polling locations, confusion around mail-in ballots, other issues with voter access, particularly for voters over the age of 65 who may have to cast a vote in or a mail-in ballot. There's issues with voter suppression, particularly with those who have had felony convictions. And then overall, safe and accessible voting through the coronavirus access crisis, access to safe voting practices. So what does that lead us to? Transformational times call for transformational mindset. What does that mean? We have to continue to get out and vote. Every voter has a voice. And in that way, this is where this leads me to. The down ballot races particularly can have a larger impact on daily life than perhaps the presidential election. We're all focused on that. But as we know, the Black experience, it's not monolithic. Our experiences are not the same. Our needs are not the same, which means we have to get out at a local, state, county level to make sure that we initiate the impact that we are looking for. And regardless of the outcome of this upcoming presidential election, we can expect changes at the state and local level that could affect, again, livelihood of the Black community, which will have long-lasting social and economic implications overall. So the down-ballot process, again, more than just the national election, which is that competition between Biden and current President Trump. State issues that you might want to look out for on your ballot include, this is not an exhaustive list, redistricting. marijuana legalization, reproductive rights, voting reform, criminal justice, issues with cash and bail, health education, employee benefits, minimum wage. And I pause here to say that's not an exhaustive list. Again, the issues vary from state to state, but where can you find this information if you want to look before you vote? Go to your Secretary of State's website. You can go to your polling location. Pause here to say we've had issues here in Texas with people not knowing what they can take in, what they can have present on their person before they go in and vote. And so if you know this information already, this is really your opportunity to share it with somebody who may not know. You can't take electronics in, but you can write on a piece of paper all of your notes and who you plan to vote for. You can take a voter guide, which is available, you know, probably in your local libraries. You know, you can print things out. You can't have, again, electronic devices, but you can go in armed with who you plan to vote for. So if that's something that you're already aware of, make sure you share that with somebody so that we don't give anybody an opportunity to say that we cannot cast a ballot once we're in the room. So let's talk about down ballot races, what they are, why they're important. Down ballot describe running or voting for offices listed below what's considered the most important, typically a national race on a ballot. For instance, in a presidential election, Senate and House seats and the contest for state and local offices are down the ballot, or you might hear this term too, down ticket. Why? Because their outcomes are often influenced by the turnout for the presidential race at the top of the ballot. But again, still very important. Both down ticket and down ballot are used to describe both Democratic and Republican candidates' races. And as we've heard, as you may know, it's hard to get interest stirred up in down ticket races. People know who they are voting for typically at the presidential level. They very rarely are, from polls and studies, are as educated about who they're voting at state, county, and local level. And, you know, straight ticket sometimes gives you that opportunity just to check the box. But that's an issue across states that is being taken away in some areas. How your down ballot vote helps. State and local races help determine things that impact our citizens on a day-to-day basis. The founder of Ballot Ready, who provides information to help people get to the polls, said this: local elected officials play a critical role in determining how equitable life in a region will be. So not just having the same opportunities, having equitable opportunities. So let's just give you a quick rundown of what you want to look for on your ballot. There might be congressional seats. This is composed of House of Representatives and the Senate. These are the folks who make the laws. They help declare war. They confirm justices to the Supreme Court. They oversee spending of public funds, which affect us all. They oversee impeachment. So again, Congress, composed of House of Representatives and the Senate. Just to give you this quick note, 165 offices are up for election in over 25 states in 2020. So what are you looking for? Governor seats, lieutenant governor seats, attorney general seats, secretary of state, state judges, and state legislator seats. When you're looking at your ballot, and this may or may not apply to New York State, but again, if this information doesn't apply to you, hold on to it, share it with your friends and your family, other colleagues, governor, highest officer in the state, veto bills, influence and create state budget, healthcare, education, services with people with disabilities, your lieutenant governor, second highest position, secretary of state, attorney generals, and judges. At the county level, again, it often mirrors at the state level, county judges, a county sheriff, a prosecuting attorney, the legislature, county clerk, treasurers, and then locally, things like mayors, town or city board council members, school boards, and boards of education. So again, watch out for these offices on your ballot. Again, a non-exhaustive list. Judges, judgeships are decided at the state and municipal level. They're decided by elections. They might be required to run explicitly partisan, one party or the other. Occasionally, they are required to run nonpartisan, meaning that they won't run under a particular party. You want to also follow the money, comptrollers and treasurers. A comptroller, if you see that on your ballot, is like a chief financial officer. They're overseeing things like audits, taxes, financial reports. They're the ones who are making sure that money is being appropriated and used properly. You need to make sure that state-funded programs, they do this, such as pensions, are running effectively. They're looking to see that funds are invested properly, and then they're also in charge of state debt, making sure that that's being managed well. Again, not all states and municipalities will have both positions, but again, comptroller, treasurer, or the like, managing the money. City council members, these are probably some of the most impactful for daily life for constituents, certainly far more than Congress or other larger scale governing bodies. They also help control money. Lawmaking, legislative actions and responsibilities are often given to city councils. You'll want to look out for things like county commissioners. They regulate city laws, county clerks. People often forget about the county clerks, but they're the ones who are properly filing and making sure things like birth certificates, death certificates, marriage certificates, divorce are properly filed and organized. They're also in charge of documents like passport applications, housing deeds, business licenses, individual county IDs. So make sure that you know in particular who your county clerks are. You may have heard a story out of Kentucky about a county clerk who she was preventing people from filing for marriage licenses, and that became big in the news in 2018 and 2019. So things like that. It's a small position that has a great impact. Sheriffs often work in tandem with police chiefs, so whether or not it applies to you or somewhere else, sheriffs are in the news right now because in the racial injustice that we're experiencing in the police forum that many states reform that many states are calling for, sheriff's positions are either being called for to be eliminated or vastly changed. So that's one thing that you'll also want to look out for. County prosecutors, district attorneys, think of them as your chief legal officers. District attorneys, they prosecute specific cases for municipalities, states, or regions. Prosecutors and district attorneys have the ability to decide which cases will get attention and which don't. So again, this often creates a lot of tension for folks that are in the position as well as the constituents that they serve. School board trustees, education, more important now specifically for the Black community than ever. School board trustees are in charge of things like hiring superintendents, approving yearly budgets associated with schools. They decide faculty contracts. They're helping to make larger decisions on things like curriculum, school safety, not just against violence, but also health and more. And then you might see further down below soil, things like soil and water conservation board trustees, water in particular being important across states. Tax collectors, again, making sure people pay their taxes on time. In case you're wondering, those are some positions that you want to look out for on your down ballot. And again, you can take notes, you can take written information, and I want to stress that because people often don't think that they can take information into the polling locations. You need to be cognizant about wearing campaign materials. You need to be cognizant around having things on your person that will indicate who you're voting, but you can have notes, and I think it's important for people to understand that. Just want to throw out some additional facts. Even though the Assemblyman talked about this, Black voters are crucial. We're in Black communities, but we're often underrepresented at every level in every political office. Kamala Harris, who we are rooting for, whether we're rooting for that party or not, is on the top ticket, but she has plenty of company in congressional races, and I think that's still important to note. Even though being in that position is not an indicator of where the power is, we still are kind of advocate for representation across the ballot. There are a record number of Black women, especially, who will also be major party nominees, in particular for the House of Representatives this year, meaning Black representation will persist on the down ballot. And I learned something new today. I did not realize Black representation was so strong in the state of New York. And so that's something to be applauded, but again, something to also be cognizant of as we head to the polls. Just going to throw this out too. 130 Black women are candidates for U.S. Congress in 2020. We have opportunities as Black voters to put Black candidates in down ballot races as not only folks can, you know, campaign, but folks who can actually win this election cycle. So it just brings me to my last point. What is our opportunity, our responsibility as Black voters? Just going to reiterate again what the Assemblyman was mentioning. The intended outcomes that we're looking for, whether in national elections, state level, county, locally, it requires a national movement of Black voters. We have to get out. Voting gives us power to shape the laws that govern our lives, and that happens at the smallest, minute level. We have to vote because our lives depend on it, and democracy depends on it. So how we, you know, you all know this, our mobility as the Black community across the country, we are situated in communities that have the lowest prospects, but we have the opportunity, particularly in this next election cycle, to make sure that that changes. So surge in Black voters, we've seen that already with this election cycle. Again, it's often tied to an upward jump in Black candidates for office. But as we've said, that doesn't always make the impact. Getting out there and doing it will. So again, just want to reiterate, what are some of the issues and trends that are going to lead us to the polls in this election cycle? Things that we want to look out for, again, on your particular ballot. Public education, employment discrimination, particularly in 2020, high unemployment rates are skyrocketing. You know, we get numbers once a month, but they often reflect the time period before that, and that doesn't reflect what's currently happening. And unemployment has been skyrocketing as large organizations continue to just experience a downturn. Spending, again, less generous for the Black community, criminal justice system, and then we have to understand that many of these positions are important at state and local government. So again, just want to reiterate, as you all begin your early voting cycle, what is going to be a point of concern? What do we want to watch out for? What do we want to personally advocate for? Issues, voting trends and concerns, again, long polling lines, reduced polling locations. There might be confusion around mail-in ballots, other issues with voting access, particularly for voters who are over the age of 65. And again, that's typically tied to access and getting to the polls, particularly during COVID-19. Folks who have experienced felony convictions, whether they are or not off what we think of as off papers. And then again, in general, safe and accessible voting through the coronavirus. So if you're trying to steer people towards making the right decision, they can find all the issues, the information that they need on the website for the Secretary of State in New York and otherwise. VoteSaveAmerica.com, Vote411.com has information. There are resources and sources, you know, even if voter registration is not available, if you experience issues at the polls, what we want to do is make sure that people have not only the right information, but understand their rights when they get to the polls. And so Vote Save America has information for folks that experience issues on election day, whether it's early voting or on that Tuesday. And I'll leave it at that.
Well, that's enough for us to carry for a long time. And we thank you. We thank Mr. Smith, Cheryl Smith, for working with you and bringing you to us today. I think that you've given us all something that we now become responsible for and have to take to our people. You know, we are blessed to get this information, but it's no good if we just keep it to ourselves. We have to go out now and educate, because I'm certain if you go to even your family members and request from them, who is responsible for what? What office does what? They can't tell you, but they're going out to vote. And we have to become more educated. So we thank you. We thank the Assemblyman for being as powerful as he is, what he's doing in my old neighborhood in East New York. So I know what he's speaking about personally. But we are doing doing this across America, because all of us are pretty much in the same seat. And we need some examples. So we thank you. I know Sibylla on Regina still can't speak for Sibylla. Unmute Sibylla.
Yes, I did.
So one of the things we'd like is for anyone in the participating with us here today, if you have any questions that you'd like to ask Ashley outright, please feel free to type it in the chat. And I believe that Tasmir will help us to ask Ashley those questions. I had one question, Ashley, because as a New Yorker, I wasn't familiar with the fact that in some municipalities or cities, you couldn't take devices into the voting with you, because in New York City, I mean, I'm taking full shopping carts, my phone, everything, and I've never been stopped or said, oh, you can't take that with you. So is that something that happens in other cities?
Yes, it has, and we've experienced it. It's happened, I know, in Virginia, which is where I'm from, the D.C. area. It's happened here in Texas. And what it leads poll workers to do is to maybe intentionally or not accuse people of voter fraud. And so what we don't want as voters is to give anybody an opportunity to tell us that we cannot cast our ballot in person and leave successfully kind of, you know, operating like that. So what we've encouraged people here in Texas to do is you can write down all your information, but just be cognizant. And I'm not as familiar with New York State, but from what I know, you're not allowed to take electronic devices into the polling locations too, particularly if there's an electronic ballot being cast. But this is where I'll step back and say, hey, do your research, make sure you know before you go what you can take and what you cannot take.
Interesting. The other question or statement is just a discussion, and I'm sorry that Assemblyman Barron had to leave, because as you said, I think you said there are over about 130 Black women running for office across the country. And so for us, very often, you know, when we say the Black face or the brown face is not enough. So yes, we can understand the down ballot races and, you know, understand the importance for voting. But ultimately, it's really educating yourself about who you're voting for, you know, because I've seen here in New York City, people who are career politicians, and I'm sure others have seen this across the country, but then those career politicians have a history of not delivering to the Black community, right? So it's always the Black folks are asked to choose between the devil you know and the devil you don't know, or, you know, the best of two devils. And so, you know, nationally, and for Black folks, when do we move past that and really start to be able to nurture young people or people from in our communities who have a commitment to our communities so that when they get elected, they deliver to our communities? And so very often people say, oh, you know, it's about how much money you give me. Every metric says Black folks don't have that kind of money to give to anyone. So what's your sense as you've done your research across the country in terms of how other communities feel about that or have handled it?
Reiterate that one more time, how?
Just in terms of having the lesser of two evils to vote for at any given time, and often being asked to vote for people who have a history of not delivering to the Black community.
I think it's as you said. I had a conversation. Someone actually called me the other day and flat out says, "Who are you voting for?" And my response to that was, outside of that conversation, was you have to understand what the issues are and you have to understand where everybody stands. That's your responsibility. And people say vote towards your conviction, put facts behind your conviction. I absolutely agree that it is vote one evil or the other, vote for the lesser of the two evils, but the lesser of two evils is not going to give us progress in 2021. It's not going to give us progress. It's not going to help us make it for the next 4 years. So, you know, one thing that I think we're trying to iterate today is you have to know the issues. That's something I think wasn't stressed enough with the census. And the census itself was kind of a mess, right? Because not only were we dealing with the coronavirus, but we were dealing with an administration that was looking to put a lid on it. But people don't understand that 10-minute test that you're taking, that 10-minute survey that you're filling out, it's impacting whether or not you're going to have a grocery store in your neighborhood. It's impacting whether or not you're going to get money for your library. It's impacting whether or not that pothole that's down the street is going to get fixed. It's impacting, you know, public safety in your community. But because we don't understand how to connect those dots, that's the point that I would want to make. You have to make it your personal responsibility to connect your dots in your community. The things that have a rise in you, the things that make you upset, the things that keep you up at night about your neighborhood, about your community, you have to figure out who on your ballot is able to make that change. So I don't know that it's ever really going to be a question. We can get caught up in semantics and say it's the lesser of two evils or it's one or the other. I absolutely agree that as a community, we often maybe don't have the finances, but I don't even know that for millennials that we even care anymore. It's not about the money. We look for action and we look for details. And I think that's something that we all have to continuously do. Follow the money, but look at who's got the ability to impact the things that are keeping you up at night. And then that's your responsibility to decide who to vote for.
I was just looking at the chat, but if anyone else has a question, please feel free to jump in there.
Regina had posted something, especially recognizing that we vote for judges quite often, and we don't know who those judges are. They just, all of a sudden, you see them on the ballot. You don't know anything about them, and they grow in their power. They begin to get voted into higher judgeships. And so we have to be very careful with that. And I think that Cheryl had, Ashton had pointed out something else. The city clerks, how we don't pay them any attention, but they are very powerful with your documents that you may find lost when you really need them the most. Mm-hmm. And that keeps a lot of people off from being able to vote because they have lost their documents or misplaced them, let's say. Okay? So it's a lot that we have to be cognizant of when we go into to those polls. Anyone else? If you can't type on the screen to speak up, then please we'll unmute you. Raise your hand.
Well, while we wait for someone else, I had another question, Ashley. As you've looked across the country, what have you found out about voter turnout? Right, so we've been talking about the offices themselves, but in terms of Black folks voting across the country, because some of these races, people get in with very low numbers. Mm-hmm. And if we voted in big numbers, we would dictate, who would get into that seat. So what have you found out about the turnout?
I think historically, I think I mentioned in the beginning, 51 million have voted as of this morning. Historically, especially in the Black community, the numbers are up. I know here in Texas, we have 1.5 million voter base for Black Americans. We have the highest in the country. Folks are turning out in record numbers. But again, it's not, sometimes it's for national elections, right? We can't necessarily look at the nitty gritty, right, for what I was talking about, which is down ballot. And that's what's really important. It's historically up. It's historically up in Black majority cities that have large historical voter turnouts and large historical just numbers and records. Baton Rouge, Louisiana, New Orleans, Atlanta, the numbers are up as well. So they're historically up, but again, it's up for the presidential election, and that's certainly important. But people aren't necessarily, we don't necessarily have the numbers for down ballot voting, which is quite important. Just personally, I did a story a couple weeks ago and counted the number of Black voters who were turning out for the very first time. I met a mother and her daughter. The mother is 69 years old, and this is the first time that she's ever voted. Her daughter has always voted straight ticket. Balloting wasn't available this year in Texas. And so that's another thing. Not only should you get out to the polls, but you need to be aware. You can't just click boxes, right? And so even if you can click a box for straight ticket balloting, which means you can basically just hit a switch and vote for one party down the line, you should really know what the issues are. Because as we said, you might not agree with the person who's in the office, or you might be pointed towards one person in particular who says that they're about your issues and your vote, but then they get in office and they don't do the things that we've asked them to. They don't do the things that they've run on. So again, it's up all across the country. It's significantly higher, 37% again, have voted as of today. which is, you know, it's extremely amazing. But we can't look at polls and we can't look at numbers and think that we know what's going to happen after Election Day. And you know, folks are already saying, scientists and folks that are studying the election are saying, we may not know on November 4th or even November 5th who is our next president of the United States or who has run kind of who will win locally and countywide and statewide.
Terrence, thank you. Terrence Baker had asked about intimidation. Has anyone been intimidated in their attempts to vote? And I was watching some of the news this morning, and there was armed people at certain polling places intimidating people. Mm-hmm. So it's a lot of that going on, Terrence. I don't know whether anything in our area is coming off that way, but there are certain parts of the country that is happening at the moment.
Absolutely. I mean, here in Texas, we certainly, you know, Texas is, we certainly experienced some voter intimidation. And again, that's, you know, with people trying to wear things outside, you know, there's a limit in where you can wear campaign apparel, you know, for instance. And so people are stepping just outside of that limitation to try to persuade or dissuade people from voting one way or the other. Mail-in ballots have been particularly difficult, and I think that has been used for voter intimidation. So if you're not aware what the process or the policy is around your mail-in ballot, casting it, dropping it off, being able to, one issue that's coming up is if you receive a mail-in ballot and you decide to vote in person, you need to make sure you understand what the rules are if you decide to vote in person. Here in Texas, you can't, you have to turn in your paperwork beforehand. You basically have to let go of that mail-in ballot before you can vote in person. And that might be true at various states across the country. We had an issue on the first day of early voting here with everyone over the ages 65 automatically received a mail-in ballot. Several of them wanted to cast their vote in person because they believed that strongly about their ability and their right to vote, and they were turned away because they weren't aware that they had to bring that ballot with them to surrender. Or you can't assume that poll workers at your voting location are going to have all of the right information. We've heard stories in Miami where folks are being turned away, and it's not because they're not doing what they're supposed to do. It's because poll workers aren't fully aware of what is supposed to happen at a poll location. Voter intimidation, again, in Miami with a police officer, I don't know if you guys heard, was wearing a Make America Great mask. Now, it's not illegal in Florida to wear campaign materials, but there's an issue because he is a public safety officer. But again, there's, you know, the implication we only know after the fact. So I think it's just, again, it's important. That's why it's important to know before you go what your rights are, what your responsibility is as a voter, so that someone can't come up to you and tell you, you can't do that. Someone can't come up and tell you that's not allowable. If you know before you go, then you can, you know, turn the table, so to say.
Okay, Terrence, I see you got off the screen and you're muted, so you can come back and ask your question. Well, thank you.
No. I was just wondering again whether or not that was an issue. Now, Walter, you mentioned armed folks at polling sites or voting sites, and I have to say, full disclosure, I was one of those individuals. You know, me and several of my friends around here had heard about some intimidation, so that folks were showing up, white folks were showing up with rifles at the polling site. So, I called our town sheriff, told him that myself and some other people would be up there as well, you know, and that we were going to be there peacefully, you know, that we weren't there for the fight, but, you know, if there was going to be a fight, it was going to be a fair one. So, you know, we let them know beforehand, but again, you know, I'm trying to see if my wife is wrong because I'm already here. But, so I'm going to keep showing up. I'm going to keep showing up with my guns and my rifles. So if anybody wants to vote, hopefully they'll feel safe to do so. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's not going to be a one-way fight.
We appreciate you, and I'm happy that you announced yourself and made the authorities know that you was going to be there. Although in some instances they don't care, so please be careful, brother.
Well, yeah. Again, I live right next to the Minnesota border, where I can't remember the brother's name now. I can't come out of my mouth. Well, the brother was shot because he was licensed to carry. He let the cops know. And they still shot him. So, Philando Castillo, thank you. I live in a small town. I'm well known here.
Mm-hmm.
Folks know that, I'm not going to start trouble, but I ain't running away from it either.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to protect anyone and everyone who wants to vote, whether you vote my way or not. Not everyone who shows up at the polls armed is trying to intimidate you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, we appreciate that. But we know the ones that they was talking
exactly.
about this morning wasn't
exactly.
you.
Okay. Exactly.
But we believe that you being there will stop some of those from coming because they're really cowards. Yeah. So thank you. Continue doing the good work. You're always there for us. Anyone else? We've been on now for a little over an hour. Cavilla? You muted. Unmute yourself. Yeah.
Thank you. I'm getting the mute button. I would like to thank everyone for joining us today, and I'm hoping that everyone is receiving our email campaign that we're currently having, which is on political accountability. And I encourage everyone to hold their elected officials accountable for their actions and for their inaction in regards to the Black community and delivering the services to our community. And with a focus on business empowerment, Black business empowerment, and our mantra here is PhD, we encourage you to purchase Black, hire Black, and deposit Black. So again, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you for being who you are. And again, I would just reiterate that we see how important the electives are, how important our mantle as Sevilla say is economics, because we don't believe that you can really get out and vote properly if you don't have an economic base. You have to be able to support a candidate. If we chose a candidate today that we wanted to run, we would better be able to raise money if we want to control that candidate. So we better get out and do something economic so that we can build power from that position. Anytime that the assemblymen spoke about the power that we have and are not getting very much in return for it, that's a shame, and it's only because we are not economically strong enough to demand that we get it. So let's continue to work forward in helping each other become economically strong so that we can become politically strong also. So I thank you. Anyone else have anything to say? Please say it now, but take this with you and spread it. Don't hold it to yourself. This is too important for you to hold. So nothing else, Thomas?
Yeah, I just want to say that, thank you, Sister Ashley, for bringing that information forward. Was awesome. I served on the National Voting Rights Museum in Selma, Alabama, and our museum is the only museum in the world that's dedicated to the history of preserving the history of the voting rights struggle in America. So we've been around 22 years. Well, 27 years, actually. And so you did an awesome job breaking all that down. I was wondering how you're going to do that. And if you hadn't done well, I was going to cuss you all out. But no, I'm just kidding. But we awesome job. And I also want to say kudos to our friend Walter for bringing us all together to make this venture that's going to be needed for after the elections, believe you me. I mean, because as Brother Charles Barron, who was one of the original founders of the organization I'm a member of, which is the National Black United Front, as he said, that when Biden and Harris get in, you're still going to have to go to war to make sure that black folk get their share of the economic pie. As you heard in the debates the other day, and I'll finish here, when Trump talked about he gave the farmers $27 billion, and Joe Biden said, well, that was taxpayer money. And then he changed, he said, yeah, it was taxpayer money. In other words, they don't like socialism until it helps them. The farmers are not farming, but they're being paid, you know. And so black folk need to do the same thing, meaning that we need to get our share as well. And so I'm glad that the PBEC is bringing that forward. Because we're going to need this after the elections are done. And then for Brother Terrence Baker, let me say that this is not the first time that people have been told at the booths, at the polling booths, that you can't carry arms. You probably remember the New Black Panther Party had members did the very same thing during the Obama administration in its second term. And so carrying arms around polls are not new. The issue is that you want to make sure that you're careful because if the president can applaud a white teenager walk down the street, shoot and kill protesters, and not face any harm as of yet, not even being really charged. I mean, you have to be very careful and be on guard and watch yourself and your friends, because you do have the right to bear arms, and don't stop doing that. Just be cautious. Let me say again, thank you, Brother Walter, for making this happen. Mm-hmm. You know, and Tashmir, and you know, Regina, and Seville, and the rest of you. The rest of us are just watching and waiting to continue the work. And I just want you to know that you have my support 100%. Thank you.
Oh, praises, brother. I just want to make one comment and we go get out of here. If you notice,
hello,
yes,
hello,
yes, who's that trying to speak?
Well, I guess that's technology, huh?
Who's that?
Am I being heard?
Who is it? Undoubtedly, we hear you and you don't hear us. Who is it?
I'm not sure. They're not showing up.
Yes.
Walter?
Yes.
Hello?
Yes. Okay. I don't know who the mute has.
What's
the mute?
I can't see who is trying to talk.
Thomas is still trying to talk.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
It's Thomas, well, he's muted now. So we'll get back to him. So I'll make the comment and we'll get ready to move. If you notice, things have sort of quieted down around Ice Cube and Killer Mike and all of them with the proposals. I will say that early in the week, I had a conversation with some of the leaders. I won't call any names, but we talked about it. And my advice to them was to raise up, because everybody has a right to make a mistake. And none of us is perfect. And what we need to do is go into a room, call all of them into the room that have a proposal. Up until now, we haven't had any proposals. So now we get proposals and we're going to start killing the proposals. No, we go into a room and discuss it. So I'm hopeful, pray for that, we will all come together and sit in a room and come up with a black proposal that will work. And so everyone, think about that. Talk about it among your constituents, and let's be prepared that at some point, maybe after the election or just before the end of it, that we'll come into a room and discuss a develop for black folks, unapologetic black folks. Okay, so that's what I wanted to say. Thomas, if you back in, unmute yourself again, and let's see, so you can lead us out of here with prayer. No, you can't hear you. Unmute yourself. Unmute yourself. Okay, you unmuted. Still can't hear you.
You okay?
Yeah, you're not. Come on. Lead us out of here with prayer.
Okay. With the name of God, most gracious, most merciful, praise be to God and sheriffs of the worlds. Most gracious, most merciful, Master Day of Judgment, be alone who we worship and thine aid we seek. Show us the straight way, the way of those of whom thou hast bestowed thy grace, those who portion is not wrath, and those who go astray. Amen.
Amen. Ashley, we thank you so very, very much. We look forward to seeing you again. Don't make this the last time. Thank everyone, Sevilla, Regina. Thanks for the support, Jasmine, for all the work you've done and how energized you are today. Thank you. Everyone have a good weekend. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Hi, did you copy for mommy? No, you didn't copy for you. Go people now. Mommy is gonna go change, and then we go outside.
On how to vote and who to vote for. If we don't know what an office holder can do and should be doing, how do we hold them accountable? You know, so we want Charles. On how to vote and who to vote for. If we don't know what an office holder can do.